In tasting wines, there's three things that you watch and enjoy. One is the color of the wine. See how nice the color of this is? And then next thing is the aroma. And you smell the product. Hold it.
Hold it by the stem.
Yeah, the proper way is right here. Let me just do catch it like I did. Grab the glass like that.
Is it glass? Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a cup. Okay.
Yes.
Just grab that and... No, the glass. The cup. Take the cup. No. Take the cup. Here.
It's The Wine Crush, a show that's all about the grape. And now, here are your hosts, Laura Lawson.
Oh, it's good. Ooh. It is.
And Michael Ambrose.
Honey, I'm home.
Hello, and welcome to The Wine Crush. I'm Michael Ambrose.
And I'm Laura Lawson.
And we're all about wine. If you've got any questions for us, give us a call. Our number is 1-877-4-CRUSH-1, 1-877-427-8741.
I think something that I have found fascinating in the last 3 months, all the major wine publications have come out with their top 100, their top 50, the best wines, and I think it's interesting that people are buying into this. I think when you're looking at reference magazines, and for those of you who follow wine enough to go to the pretty glossy section in your bookstore or your grocery store and see wines like see magazines like Food and Wine, Wine Enthusiast, Wine Spectator, and every year these magazines come out with what they decide are the top 100 best wines of the year. And while I really do think it has some merits, what I don't like when you're looking at the top 100 wines, they're wines that are expensive. They're wines that are hard to get. Ironically enough, most of these magazines put their top 100 out, and every time they have a big major ad, look at that. Those wines actually made it into the best wines of the year.
That is kind of surprising that the full six-color ad from such and such winery just happens to have made that 100 list.
This goes back to some of you who follow our show know I occasionally have a soapbox, and this is definitely one of my soapbox issues. I think it's lovely that there are magazines out there to guide you and to help you. But wine is subjective. Wine is what you like to drink. You don't need to be told exactly what is best and what is better. Wine is geared towards what you like, what you're going to drink with your friends, what you're going to take out with your company needs to be what you like, not what someone tells you is the best wine in the world.
Let's just take a look at this subject a little bit differently. Let's just say I don't know anything about wine, and I'm walking into Harris Teeter. I'm walking into Harris Teeter, and I'm looking at these shelves. If I've got something that will help at least guide me, at least I know, sure enough, there are these $150 wines that are in the top 10 or the top 20 or the top 50. There are also a couple of $10 wines in there. And what they try to do with the best 100 wines is, you know, I can't speak for the publication so much, but I do believe that they try to give a balanced approach where there's a value proposition as much as there is a quality and quality only, regardless of the price proposition. And so if I don't know anything and a wine is stuck in there in the top 25 and it's $15, I'm going to probably be looking for it.
But Michael, 9 out of 10 times, you're looking back at the year. When you say the best wines of 2007, the value wines that are in there are not going to be the same vintage you can pick up on your local shelf. The fact that any of those wines are going to be at your local Mega Mart, standing out or stacked, are slim to none. These are wines that received high press during the year that have already disappeared. They are simply a benchmark for what you should have bought. I really think looking back on it, it makes the general public appear stupid. Hey, listen, you should have bought this when we ranked it perfectly, but see, now that you haven't, I'm going to make it a top 100. It's collectible, and ha-ha, you can't have it.
Well, they can probably have it, but it'll cost them a little bit more money.
But then you start looking at secondary markets, and then it'd be fun to actually see if we could graph it. The auction values of wines before they were in the top 100 versus after they were in the top 100.
Yeah.
I just think, ultimately, this does more damage to day-in, day-out wine drinkers than it does benefit them.
How would you then get to these folks that are the day-in and day-out wine drinkers and say, okay, you like Sterling Merlot? Well, not every time you go to the store can you get Sterling Merlot. Who's going to tell these folks what the alternatives to Sterling Merlot are if they don't read something and take a guide from somewhere?
Well, I think that might actually be an excellent point on how to modify the top 100. Hi, Chateau St. Jean Fumé Blanc is actually in the top 100. We realize you can't get this vintage. However, encourage people to look for the wineries that are represented in the top 100. Listen, the Fumé Blanc, you might not be able to get it anymore, but we recommend you look for the Chardonnay. We recommend you look for the Cabernet. We recommend you look for another one of their offerings instead of limiting it to a specific wine, a specific vineyard. How about this? Why don't publishers take notes? Why don't you start ranking the top 100 winemakers, the top 100 wineries, the top 100 negociants?
Yeah, that's
instead
good.
Instead of searching for a needle in a haystack, let's pick something a little more broader scale. You've said this time and time again. Wine drinkers have finally surpassed beer drinkers in the United States. Well, let's finally start playing to them. Let's teach them a little bit more so that they realize that wine is not surrounded by snobs, it's not surrounded by connoisseurs, and you don't have to make $1 million to truly appreciate the best of what wine has to offer. Make it so the general public has a shot at looking at the best that wine has to offer. Help the public.
I believe that these guides have their place, and if you actually look at more than one and you see a couple of the same wines put together on each of several lists, you've got a pretty good idea that there's going to be a high quality wine coming out of that particular winery.
Please, by all means, we'd love to hear your opinions.
Yeah.
God knows Michael and I are very, very stringent on ours. Call us 1-877-4-CRUSH-1. Email us. Let us know your thoughts. We'd love to hear from those of you who religiously abide by the top 100, and we'd love to hear from those of you who realize that it's nothing more than a benchmark.
Now, we're off to the wine line with Michael and Laura. 1-877-4-CRUSH-1.
We have one of our amazing guests today. We have Dan Cohn of B.R. Cohn Wineries, one of the landmarks in Sonoma. Dan, welcome to the Wine Crush.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you for having me, Michael.
Hey, we're glad to have you here.
Dan, everyone has known about B.R. Cohn for a while, being the landmark in Sonoma that it is. And we know you're known for Chardonnay and obviously Olive Hill Cabernet with the spectacular press it's gotten lately. The Silver Label Cab that we all know you can't keep enough in stock. But I think a lot of our listeners are curious about Doobie Red and how that ties into the history of B.R. Cohn.
The history of B.R. Cohn, I'll go into. The Doobie Red is a wine that we did for charity. My father, Bruce Cohn, he's actually the manager of the classic rock and roll band, the Doobie Brothers. He's actually been their manager for 37 years, their entire career. They did 15 albums, and so the idea was to give 3 album covers a year for 5 years. So the '02 vintage was the first vintage, and you got Doobie Brothers, Toulouse Street, and Captain and Me, so you got 4 3-packs in a case.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, and so you had 3 album covers every year for 5 years. So the best part about it was we only make 1,000 cases of each vintage, and they're also, the profits go to the National Vets Foundation. We do it for charity. It was Keith Knutson, the drummer, who passed away a couple of years ago. It was his favorite charity, so that's why we decided to do the Doobie Red.
And so, as I understand it, you're making a case or a half a case of wine, and you're using the label covers as your labels on your bottles? Is that right?
The album covers are the labels on the wine. That's correct. And a lot of those, if we want to call them novelty wines, the wine is usually not very good. But we actually figured that people were going to be collecting the album covers. So we made a pretty sturdy Bordeaux blend. So these wines are actually built to age.
How do you go from being a manager of the Doobie Brothers for 37 years and then turn to being such a stellar wine producer? How did this happen? What was the transition?
Well, my father definitely has a tendency of being at the right place at the right time. And it's actually a pretty unique story. My father was actually born in Chicago and moved out to the Russian River Valley in the early 50s. And there they actually had the first grade A goat dairy in California.
Goat?
Yeah, goats. My father milked goats for $1.25 a week, you know, 4:30 in the morning and 4:30 at night every day.
Does he know you're saying that on national radio?
Yeah, he's actually glad that's over. We could have been in a whole different business.
That's true.
You know, after about 10 years of that, they sold the goat dairy and moved to San Francisco, where he went to school for communications, radio and television, got a degree in that, and went to work for TV station 20 in San Francisco. And there were a lot of bands coming out of San Francisco at this time. You know, it was 1969, The Grateful Dead, Janis Joplin, Creedence Clearwater, Jefferson Airplane. These were all bands coming out of San Francisco at this time.
So I remember them, you know? I remember them solid.
They were all local acts in San Francisco. So, you know, being the entrepreneur that he is, he actually decided to open a rehearsal hall in this dilapidated warehouse down on 3rd Street in San Francisco where these bands could come and rehearse before they go on tour. And he had an opportunity to meet a lot of these bands, and a couple of guys came to him, and they had a really good sound, and they wanted to send a record to Warner Brothers, and they called themselves PUD.
PUD?
P-U-D.
Oh.
Yeah, P-U-D. And they wanted to send a record to Warner Brothers. And they sent a and he goes, well, I think you're going to have to change your name. So they came back with the name the Doobie Brothers. So anyway, they send a record to Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers calls and actually wants to see the band live, a showcase. And they were pretty much doing Hell's Angels parties in Ricardo's Pizzeria. Those were pretty much the only gigs that they had. So they figured that the pizzeria might be the best place to showcase. And Warner Brothers actually sent up a gentleman by the name of Carl Scott. And Carl was responsible for bringing the Beatles into America. And Carl weighed about 400 pounds. And he took two seats on the plane coming up from L.A. And the band showcased. And he loved it. And he ate two pizzas, and he signed the band. And they asked my father to manage him. And he says, he's 22 years old. He says, you know, guys, I was raised on a goat dairy. I work at a TV station. I don't know the first thing about managing a band. They said, well, we don't know anything about being a band either. You know, we'll learn together. So they released the album, listened to the music, and it sold 2.7 million records.
Yeah,
and away they went.
We're going to step away for a few moments. So, hey, don't forget to check out our website, winecrush.com. That's WINECRUSH.com. We've got all sorts of fun and useful information about wine on our website, and you can even email us with your questions, comments, and opinions. This is The Wine Crush.
Looking for some good news at the gas pump? Chevy has 7 models that offer an EPA estimated 30 miles per gallon highway or better. From HHR with an EPA estimated 30 mpg highway to the Aveo 5 with an EPA estimated 34 mpg highway and Cobalt XFE with an EPA estimated 36 miles per gallon highway. Chevy's MVPs of MPG based on EPA segmentation. See your local Chevy dealer.
So you think you're a Team 48 fan, right?
Try me.
How many Sprint Cup races have Jimmy?
229.
How many did
34
they?
34 wins.
Where was Jimmy?
El Cajon, California.
When was he?
9-17-75.
Where was Chad?
Rockport, Illinois.
I'm sorry, what?
Rockport, Illinois.
Rockport, Illinois? No, my friend. Chad Knaus was born in Rockford, Illinois. You call yourself a fan.
Become an official member of the Team Lowe's Racing Fan Club. Just log in at www.lowesracing.com and sign up today.
This is Jimmy Johnson, and I want to thank all of the Lowe's Team 48 fans for cheering us on over the years.
Lowe's, let's build something together.
There's a reason Roush Performance chooses Cooper Tires for their high-performance vehicles. Just ask Cooper Tires technical advisor, Johnny Unser.
Roush tunes vehicles to reach their absolute limits. They need tires that can handle those limits, from handling to durability to safety. That's why they choose Cooper. And that same race-bred technology goes into every Cooper tire you buy, no matter what you drive.
For more information and to find a dealer near you, visit CooperTire.com. Cooper Tires. Don't give up a thing.
Hey, Doug, are you okay?
Mark, I'm practicing my ninja moves so I can take on weeds with Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer.
Do you mean there are ninjas inside the Spectracide bottle?
Well, using Spectracide is like sending an army of tiny green ninjas to kill weeds and unwanted grass right down to the root. You see the result in as fast as 3 hours.
I see, Sensei. I'm heading over to Lowe's to pick up Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer with ninja fighting power.
Just remember, Mark, weeds can't hide from Spectracide. Side.
Bring the ball up. See the court, baby.
Good.
See the court.
Let's go.
All right, see the open man. Go past.
Listen carefully.
Yeah!
Okay, get back.
What do you hear?
Good deeds.
Yes!
Do you know what that is?
No, that's right. Okay.
That's the sound of someone being there. The sound of someone caring about a kid.
Good shot. Yes! Yes!
That's the sound of a mentor. See a movie together, play catch, or just hang out. The important thing is spending time together. A little of your time means a lot to a kid.
This is Laura Bush. Help America's youth. Be a friend. Be a mentor. Just be there.
To be a mentor, go to BigBrothersBigSisters.org. That's BigBrothersBigSisters.org. A public service message brought to you by Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and the Ad Council.
Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities.
Have a banana.
Eating well.
Have two bananas.
And playing.
Come on, Baloo.
Go together like best friends.
You better believe it.
With the food pyramid, the bare necessities of living healthy are easy.
That bring the bare necessities of life.
It gives you just the right amount of grains, vegetables, fruits, milk, and meats and beans.
Crazy.
So eat right.
You eat it?
You're gonna love the way they tickle.
Be active.
Now move. That's it.
And don't forget to have fun.
You're lots of fun, Baloo.
That's the way to be the best.
You're all right, kid.
At anything you do.
Yeah, man.
You can go to mypyramid.gov to play some games and find out more.
Me and Baloo, we've got things to do.
This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ad Council.
If you'd like to get your questions about wine and food answered on the air, call us at 1-877-4-CRUSH-1. That's 1-877-427-8741. Jerry, welcome to the Wine Crush. You have Laura and Michael here to confound and confuse you. What can we do for you today?
Hey there, Mike and Laura. I've got a question that I don't know if you can help me with or not, but I'm going to give it a shot. My boss has a birthday coming up, and he's starting to get into wines and that kind of thing. And I'd like to get him something that's appropriate. He's a good guy. He's not that good of a guy, so I don't want to go totally over the top and spend like $100 or something. Can you guys suggest something that's maybe appropriate for a gift in this case, you know, that might be a little bit unique and different?
How long have you worked for him?
Well, after he hears this, maybe not much longer.
See, that's where I was going with this. Is there a promotion in your future? We can certainly work with that.
Well, no. I've been working for him for about 5.5 years, so I want to do something nice.
What are you looking at, about $50?
Well, I was hoping you guys could make some recommendations because I'm really not sure what's appropriate in this situation.
Well, Yellowtail is good for $6.
Oh, hush.
Okay.
Michael's trying to get you fired. He tends
there
to do bad things like that.
I can do that all by myself, Michael.
Exactly. Jerry, do you know for sure that your boss likes wine?
I know he's really getting into white wines.
What I would recommend and what is the universal appropriate gift, whether it's a hostess gift, whether it's a wedding gift, whether it's a baby shower gift, whether it's, my God, you've just had a bad haircut gift, is always going to be a bottle of champagne. And whether you are a drinker, whether you're a non-drinker, whether your boss is married and his wife likes wine or not, everyone can always find an excuse sometime during the year to pop a bottle of bubbly. So I know that personally, whenever I have to give gifts, unless I know someone is passionate about a particular wine, champagne is always the way to go.
I think that Laura's got a really good point. Champagne being real champagne. I don't think that the same cachet is appropriate with American sparkling wines. At the same time, though, if he's into white wines and he's experimenting, there are several wines that I really think are just outstanding. And if you turn him on and he really likes these wines, you're going to be in a good place. One of them is called Dutton Goldfield. I personally love it. I think it's a great value for the style it is. You can probably find it for, $35 or $40. And that would be something that I would recommend that you give him, particularly if he's becoming a person who really appreciates white wines and American white wines at that.
Something else that's very, very unique that people tend to overlook, being a white wine drinker, I might look towards the dessert section of your local Mega Mart, and I might find a really good bottle of sherry, or I might find a really good bottle of dessert wine. And what's neat about looking at most of these dessert wines is they have really cool, really festive labels and presentations. So if you're just doing it for a gift mentality, like a bottle of Farniente Dolce is one of the prettiest bottles out there, it certainly makes an impression whether or not they open the bottle.
Well, guys, thank you so much for the advice. I do appreciate it.
We certainly hope we helped you, and let us know how it works, whether you go with champagne or yellowtail, and we'll see whether or not you're employed next month.
Good deal.
Thanks, champagne over the yellowtail. Okay, Laura, it looks like we've got Reed on the phone. Reed, welcome to the Wine Crush.
Well, thanks very much. One thing that I was interested in trying to find out is basically differences in terms of the recommended ways of storage of white and red wines. Are there certain fundamental differences that you should observe in basically how those are stored and preserved?
Well, generally, you don't like to mix them up. You wind up with rosés, and people don't like those too much.
You know, the storage is pretty much similar. Under ideal conditions, you would want to store your white wines a little bit cooler than your red wines. Most people would agree that 56 to 58 degrees is the ideal temperature to store red wines, and the ideal temperature to store white wines is about 50 to 52 degrees. I only have one cellar that I use, and it stays at about 56 degrees, and so I'll pull a bottle out of that and put it in the refrigerator, if it's a white wine, about 30 minutes before we're ready to serve it. That's if you've got a storage unit. You know, a lot of people, if you're going down into your basement and you're putting it in the basement, there are several different things that you need to consider. One is the temperature, but also the lack of light is important. The lack of vibration is equally important. So you're looking for a quiet place without much light that's relatively cool.
Reed, how often do you drink wines? Are you looking to store wines as an investment, or are you looking to store them as future pleasure?
Well, it's sort of both. I mean, I drink wine on a fairly regular basis, but particularly reds, and particularly my favorites being some of the French Red Bordeaux and some of the California Cabernets.
Mm-hmm. I personally would advise you to get some type of a storage unit, because Bordeaux's and some of the and the better California Cabs really do benefit from some aging. And I'm not talking about 20 years, but I am talking about 4 or 5 years.
There's been some interesting studies lately. I think all of us can walk into, whether it's your Home Depot, Lowe's, one of your home improvement stores, and we've all walked down that aisle and seen the little refrigerators that are masquerading as wine coolers. And I think in the last 9 months, they've done some studies saying if you are going to keep your wine over 2 years, then you are making a very bad mistake putting your red wines into these cabinets. What happens is there's enough minute vibrations in those little wine coolers that they are actually causing some premature damage to the wines.
But like you said, Reed, if you've got those Bordeaux's, you really, you know, if you're paying $100 a bottle for wine, you've got $1,200 invested in one case. You probably should be investing a similar amount in a storage unit for that can keep up to, say, 10 cases. The more expensive units do isolate the compressor from the body of the refrigeration unit, and they will help store your wine.
If you'd like to get your questions about wine and food answered on the air, call us at 1-877-4-CRUSH-1. If you're more into numbers, 1-877-427-8741. We're not done yet. Stay with us.
So, you know, we won the cup in 06, then we won again in 07. So, naturally, me, Jimmy, Chad, and the guys, we're really happy. And, you know, of course, we've had some...
What's this we? We won in 06. We won in 07. What, are you part of Lowe's Team 48?
Yeah.
Become an official member of the Team Lowe's Racing Fan Club. Just log in at www.lowesracing.com and sign up today. You'll get the club's free track record magazine, members-only discounts, weekly club emails, and lots more.
This is Jimmy Johnson. Looking forward to having you on the team.
Lowe's. Let's build something together.
Z-Max. It helps your car, truck, motorcycle, or boat save gas and last longer. The secret of Z-Max is micro lubrication. Z-Max penetrates deep into the metal of your engine and drivetrain where regular oil can't. Z-Max reduces heat and friction, dissipates carbon buildup, restores power, and reduces fuel consumption. Z-Max maintains mileage in your new car and improves mileage in your older car. It works. Log on to Z-Max.com to find a Z-Max retail performance partner. Z-Max. Performance you can feel.
You wanna go? All of you who wanna go to college, wanna go? You best listen to this knowledge. Listen. You gotta be a go-getter, cause it's hard to get there. Get up in their face, get up in their space. Excuse me, missus. You say you're my teacher, you say you're my preacher. Excuse me, mister. You act like you're large and you say you're in charge. So show me, what is it that I need? So tell me, the books I should read. Somebody hit me with the 411. There are steps to take, there's a job to be done. I want step one, step two, step three spelled out. All the info is what I'm about. So ask for help and do not stop. knowhowtogo.org. Let's ride.
That was Farnsworth Bentley with Wanna Go. For more college info, visit knowhowtogo.org. Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ad Council.
Son, I want you home by 10, all right?
I know.
Hold on. Listen, we need to talk about drinking. You know how I feel about alcohol.
Yeah, I know.
Seriously, you're way too young to drink. I know some kids are drinking, but you're my kid. And just because they drink doesn't mean you have to.
I know.
I mean, you're still growing, you're still developing. You may think you can handle it, but you're not a grown-up yet. It's dangerous.
I know, okay?
Teenagers know everything. So talk about underage drinking before they know it all. Before they're teens.
Listen, when you drink, it screws up your judgment. I don't want you getting hurt. You could make some serious mistakes.
I know, I know.
Listen to me. This is real.
I know, okay? I know.
Start talking before they start drinking. And keep talking. To learn more about the dangers of underage drinking and what to say to your kids, go to stopalcoholabuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Salagadoola, metchagaboola, bibbidi-bobbidi-boo.
You must be your fairy godmother. Yes.
It doesn't take a fairy godmother to tell you that the right fit means everything.
Good heavens, child. You can't go in that.
Children under 4'9" need to be in a booster seat because they aren't ready for adult safety belts alone. Many parents miss the important step of booster seats.
Maybe you better explain things to him.
Booster seats raise your child up so that a safety belt designed for adults will fit and protect them properly.
Oh, that does make a difference.
Remember that 4'9" is the magic number. And get your little pumpkin there safely in a booster seat.
Hop in, my dear. Oh, thank you.
And like Cinderella, you can live happily ever after.
It's like a dream. A wonderful dream come true.
For more information, visit boosterseat.gov. This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Wine Crush.
In that case, I challenge you to a battle of wits.
To the death, I accept.
Good, then pour the wine.
Here once again are Laura Lawson and Michael Ambrose.
Elizabeth, thank you for calling the Wine Crush. We hear you have questions about vegetarian meals.
Yes, Laura, I do. My daughter's godmother is a strict vegetarian, and I'm hosting a birthday dinner for her, and the meal will be vegetarian. And I have a variety of people coming and want to know, can I serve red wine with this meal? Is it strictly a white wine activity? What can I do with a meal that's an entirely vegetarian experience?
Actually, this is interesting. As far as pairing a wine with vegetarian meals, that's not generally a problem. There's a lot of great wines out there that pair with different dishes. If you're mother-in-law, whoever is coming to the meal, is a strict vegetarian, she may not drink wine at all. There are a number of wines out there. When you find and filter red wine and white wine, it is done with egg whites. And sometimes true vegetarians will not drink wine because they know that egg whites have been involved in the fermenting process.
Fortunately, I don't think that's going to be her issue.
Okay. What are you thinking about to serve for your dish? You know, one thing that always pops into my mind is some type of a marinated portobello mushroom, and then you add, asparagus, broccoli.
Well, we're doing a layered vegetable strata.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The phyllo crust.
Okay. What are the main ingredients?
Well, it's layers, squashes and spinach, root vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
There is a very light sauce that goes with it. It's actually a gorgeous dish. It's baked and you cut it into shapes. Beautiful to serve.
Okay. Sounds entirely too healthy for our doings.
Yeah, here. That's right.
We'll make up with the bar. You know, we'll make up for all that with the bar.
There you go. And in my case, I guess I would have to heavily sedate myself to partake of that particular dish. But
carnivore.
Yes,
perhaps we can do a portobello accompaniment and somehow make it look like a steak.
There you go. In that case, please invite me. I think with those type of dishes,
Michael's hedging
Sauvignon
so badly.
Blanc.
Yeah, he's hedging so badly. He
I
eats
am.
Nothing but meat. He can't handle this vegetarian thing.
Well,
Elizabeth, it's pretty simple. When you're looking at doing spinach, when you're looking at doing your leafy green vegetables, it is very easy to grab some white wines and wind up with too much grass, too much herb, and too much green going on. something to think about. If you're looking at something, if you're looking at squash, if it has spinach in it, look for an oaky Chardonnay. It's going to have enough balance to it that'll bring out the sweetness in the spinach. It'll bring out the sweetness in the squash. If you are looking at something that's going to have a little more, I don't know, of the kale background, of asparagus, if you're looking at a little more of the cucumber, I would look at doing, don't laugh, a Chenin Blanc. I would look at doing a Sauvignon Blanc or one of the lighter style wines. Now, what we joke about as far as being the perfect white wine accompaniment, it doesn't matter what you're serving, is always going to be Pinot Grigio. This tends to keep groups of women happy upon hour after hour after hour, but it does suit everything you're doing. If you get a moderately priced Pinot Grigio, say one that runs $8 to $10, it's going to have enough body, it's going to have enough of the whole flavor, savory, amagi kind of characteristic that it's going to balance out your vegetarian dish.
You know, something else that you might want to try, Elizabeth, or at least experiment with perhaps before your mom comes to town, would be a light red wine, something like a Beaujolais. That might work pretty well, particularly if you're getting all of these earthy flavors with the spinach and the kales and the mushrooms and that type of thing.
Now, that's where I was going with this, because I do have some wine drinkers that are just interested in a red wine. Another question for the two of you is, the salad course with this meal is going to be pears, gorgonzola cheese, sugared walnuts. Yep. Is that going to overpower any of these white wines?
Laura hit it right on the head earlier when she was talking about the Chenin Blancs or even a Riesling. That would just blend beautifully with that. And some people might disagree, but I think you can take a good quality Riesling right into your entree as well. But don't get Blue Nun. Get something a little bit higher quality than that.
And definitely look for a drier Riesling. If you're going to do it with candied walnuts, if you're going to have the sugared pears, then it's definitely something you need, the dry style Riesling, not the sweet.
You can get that from your local grocery store, but look for that word Cabinet. That's the driest of the Riesling styles. That's K-A-B-I-N-N-E-T-T.
Michael can't even spell
on
air.
I know, Michael, that you would never actually attend a vegetarian meal, but do appreciate your expertise, both to you and Laura, for sending me in the right direction. And I think this is going to be a huge success.
Well, Elizabeth, thank you very, very much. And as Michael is our resident vegetable, he should be right on target. Elizabeth, thank you for calling the Wine Crush, and please have us in mind if you have any further questions.
Laura, we've got Steve on the phone. He wants to talk about Italian wines. Welcome to the Wine Crush, Steve.
I know it's a very diverse subject. There's so many questions I have regarding it, but I just wanted to get kind of a brief overview of Italian wines. And I'm actually going out to dinner with my wife, and we've been to a number of Italian restaurants, and I always have questions when I look at the wine list. And you know, I'm pretty familiar with drinking Chiantis and Classico Chiantis and so forth, and you know, but when you get into the list and you see the Barbaras and the other types of red wines on the list, just wanted to get a kind of a brief overview of Italian red wines and basically bodies and so forth.
There's actually no way to give one set overview of Italian wine. I think the easiest way to look at this, you drink Chianti and you are looking to try and find something a little bit different. So let's look at it from two ways. One, I would recommend next time you're at that local restaurant, look for a wine called Barbera d'Asti. And what that is, it's Barbera from Asti. And what this is, this will take you a step away from Chianti. It's lusher. It's not necessarily as alcoholic, and it has some of the finer points you tend to find in the Sangiovese grape with just a little more elegance to it. So that's along the same lines of what you get with Chianti. If you want to take a big step up, both in power and in price point, I would look for a wine called Brunello di Montalcino. And what this is, it's Sangiovese once again, but it's just aged in oak a little bit longer. It tends to have more restricted growing areas. It's kind of like a toothpick to a baseball bat versus Chianti versus this wine. Does that make sense? It's kind of, there's such a unique stair step when you look at Italy and you look at the different things. However, for all of y'all with questions for Italian wines out there, for all of you who drink Chiantis, take a step back, find a restaurant wine list that has a Rosso di Montalcino on it, and take a chance with that wine. Generally, these are the freshest. These are the least expensive of the expensive wines that Italy has to offer. And generally, they're the ones that are going to open your eyes to something beyond Chianti.
Yeah.
Feel free to call in with other Italian questions.
Great. Thank you very much.
Up next, I think we have Laurie.
I'm looking to host about 50 people at my home just for a cocktail party where I'll serve wines. And I'm looking for some selections that are other than your traditional Chardonnay or Merlot that would be good wines to serve, have some different tastes, but also a little bit budget conscious. Do you think you can help me out?
Michael, do you have your suggestions? I know that Michael inevitably is going to go over the pond for this one. He has that
gleam in his eye. I'm not. With 50 people, I'm going to stay on this side of the pond. And I would go with a producer that's not very well-known. There are so many well-known producers like Mondavi and BV and that group of people that are making good quality wines, but you're looking for something that's going to come and be different. You want to just raise some eyebrows and have people say, this is interesting. One of the things that I would suggest would
be... Interesting in a good way, of course.
Yes.
Unlike at your house. That's interesting.
Interesting, but also memorable. That's exactly right.
Well, that's right. And I think Argentina is making great Malbec, and it tastes like expensive Bordeaux for about half the price. Look for Catena. They make a really outstanding Malbec, and they come in several different price points.
How do you spell that?
M-A-L-B-E-C.
B-E-C. Okay, great.
Mm-hmm. Who are those guys?
Laura Lawson.
Maybe she's found a way to freeze dry evil so that we can drink it when she's not here.
Michael Ambrose.
Thank you. Welcome, folks. Have fun. Drink responsibly.
The Wine Crush.
What do you think they do there? They don't drink milkshakes, I assure you.
Hey-ya! Doug, are you okay?
Mark, I'm practicing my ninja moves so I can take on weeds with Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer.
Do you mean there are ninjas inside the Spectracide bottle?
Well, using Spectracide is like sending an army of tiny green ninjas to kill weeds and unwanted grass right down to the root. You see the result in as fast as 3 hours.
I see, Sensei. I'm heading over to Lowe's to pick up Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer with ninja fighting power.
Just remember, Mark, weeds can't hide from Spectracide.
I'm on a test track, riding in a Roush Mustang with Cooper Tires technical advisor Johnny Unser to learn why Roush Performance chooses Cooper Tires.
Wow, feel that grip?
Yeah, I felt it. Cooper incorporates what they learn at the track into engineering high-performing, reliable, safe tires for whatever you drive on the street.
Okay, time to cut her loose.
We weren't already cutting her loose? Cooper Tires, don't give up a thing. For more information and to find a dealer near you, visit CooperTire.com. Okay, seriously, I want out.
Looking for some good news at the gas pump? Chevy has 7 models that offer an EPA estimated 30 miles per gallon highway or better. From HHR with an EPA estimated 30 mpg highway, to the Aveo 5 with an EPA estimated 34 mpg highway, and Cobalt XFE with an EPA estimated 36 miles per gallon highway. Chevy's MVPs of mpg, based on EPA segmentation. See your local Chevy dealer.
When a legend like Carroll Shelby puts Z-Max in every car he owns, maybe you should too.
I know it works.
Z-Max with micro-lubrication reduces wear on vital engine parts and increases horsepower. If you're a custom engine builder or a do-it-yourselfer, Z-Max belongs in your car. Z-Max, easy to use. One in your gas and one in your oil every 5,000 miles. Take it from Carroll Shelby.
I put my name on the line on that, and I mean...
Log on to Z-Max.com and find a retail performance partner. Z-Max, performance you can feel.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Dying forests, they were a tap on the shoulder. We got a finger in our chest from the rising sea level, and a sharp poke in the ribs from recent wildfires in Alaska. Then dying coral reefs and eroding coastlines pushed us hard. The drowned polar bears, that was a shove. Melting permafrost, that was a slap. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution before it's too late. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
And welcome back to the Wine Crush. This is Laura Lawson and Michael Ambrose. We have Dan Cohn of BR Cohn Wineries, one of the landmarks in Sonoma. Dan is actually, I believe, Senior Vice President and Director, National Director of Sales for B. Arcone. And I think the new up-and-coming wine drinker that we're trying to appeal to, you know, they look at labels, they see the Kendall Jacksons, they see the Behringers of the world, but it's fun to broaden their horizons and see things like B. Arcone, who have really been a legacy of Sonoma since Sonoma was a little more than grape country, and to make it so resounding, which is why we like having people like you come tell us the stories.
And that's the thing, and you hit the nail on the head, Laura, with that. You know, with Sonoma, you know, we're just a bunch of dumb hick farmers, but we just found something to do with the grapes, you know? And we don't have the trains and the trams and all that stuff like they have over there in the Disneyland for adults of the Napa Valley. But it's very picturesque and, you know, 19 vintages, actually, well, 20 vintages now. We average a 92, you know, in the Wine Spectator, Wine Enthusiast, and Bon Appetit magazine. It's really due to a unique microclimate that we have at the vineyard that nobody in the valley has. And my father didn't know the time when he bought it, but we have a hot spring that travels underneath the ground at the property and actually comes up at 140 degrees of the property.
Wow. That's something I didn't even know. That's cool, Dan.
Yeah, yeah. It actually keeps our soil 7 to 9 degrees warmer than anybody in the valley. It's actually rendered us completely frost-free for 50 years.
Wow.
So yeah, we're only the third owner since the Spanish land, Banana Belt.
Yeah. Hey, Dan,
It's like the wet side and the dry side of an island. We're on the dry side. And we're in the Lea Sonoma Mountain where it keeps the fog off of us. You go 5 minutes in the ocean, and it's socked in fog. And there's like this blue spot where all the fill is from the thermal spring.
Hey, Dan, how many cases are you producing a year now?
Well, we're still very, very limited production. We're going to close at right around about 42,000 cases this year. But 32,000 of that will be the Silver Label Cabernet, which is more or less our premium by the glass Cabernet or our 1999 on the shelf Cabernet.
Yeah, cool.
I've certainly watched that over the last 6 years take off and just become a definitive portion of what Sonoma Valley is. And when people are looking, like you said, once again, when you look at family wineries in Sonomas, you look at Benzinger, you look at B. Arcone, and you see that people can truly bond together and be the farmers they want to be while putting quality products out. And I think that's what all of us love about Sonoma. And I'm sure Michael and I are going to get in this debate at some point. But that is what grape growing, and that is what winemaking is about. It's farming. It is not all the showcasing. It's not all the amazing tasting rooms. It's the man sitting next to you in the blue jeans and the work boots and the baseball cap who makes it happen.
And he might even be playing a little Doobies music on the side.
That's right. That was the story that somebody, I did the same thing at Epcot Food and Wine last year, and Ed Murray, who was their Southeast regional guy for Camus, said that every time he went to the winery, he got in the truck, and there was a Doobie Brothers song playing. So I don't know if my father gave him a tape, and it got stuck in the tape deck of the pickup truck, but it was the only tape he ever played every time he came up to the winery.
Dan, you and I have known each other for years, and I actually would consider us friends, so I'm going to put you on the spot here. You and I were actually having a conversation, I don't know whether it was last week or yesterday, the way these things go. You have recently taken over some new responsibilities at B. Arcone.
Yes, absolutely. The olive oil company. We actually have the largest and oldest Picholine olive grove in California. We're actually the only ones that make a single variety French Picholine olive oil from 140-year-old trees.
Translate that, because understand, my closest thing I come to cooking is boiling water. What does that mean to me?
Well, the Picholine olive is a really, really small olive. Only it gets a very low yield at the press. The big boys, the big olives, the big Kalamatas and Missions get about 48 gallons a ton.
Are those the ones I put in my martinis?
Exactly.
Okay,
right. We only get about 27 gallons a ton. So nobody makes olive oil from it, but it's the best to make olive oil from. And I believe we just received number one olive oil in the country,
wow,
rated by Consumer Report. So that was another good pop for the small family winery. We have the Picholine extra virgin olive oil. We have the extra virgin, the organic, we have a balsamic and herb dipping oil. We have a whole line of gourmet vinegars, Cabernet vinegar, Chardonnay vinegar, champagne vinegar, raspberry champagne vinegar made with fresh raspberries.
All right, Dan, we don't want to talk about vinegar on a wine show. It's never
okay.
A good topic unless we're bringing it up.
All right, cancel the vinegar stuff.
All right. Dan, at this moment, we are going to cut you off and just say thank you. We have truly enjoyed you calling in, and I have known you for ages, and I am looking forward to working with you in the future. We are just so happy to see B.R. Cohn become such a shining star in Sonoma Valley with your recent press on Olive Hill and on your special select cab. Your dad was definitely in the right place at the right time to have lightning struck both in the music business and in the wine business. And, of course, as we all know, in his offspring.
Well, thank you very much, Laura. You know what? We wouldn't be anywhere, you know, we wouldn't be anywhere without you, you know, and everybody that you do in the business. And you're definitely the one for, you know, that has built the brand and got the brand out there and got the brand name recognition and brought the wine from California to the East Coast. You
Dan,
know?
Just remember I have that on tape and I will use it against you come allocations.
Anytime, anytime.
Dan, hey, thanks
thank you very much.
Michael.
Appreciate
nice talking
it.
To you,
thanks,
Dan.
Laura.
It was great.
Yes, America's favorite program will be back. You'll get more laughs, more fun, more thrills.
This is the Wine Crush.
There's a reason Roush Performance chooses Cooper Tires for their high-performance vehicles. Just ask Cooper Tires technical advisor, Johnny Unser.
Roush tunes vehicles to reach their absolute limits. They need tires that can handle those limits, from handling to durability to safety. That's why they choose Cooper. And that same race-bred technology goes into every Cooper tire you buy, no matter what you drive.
For more information and to find a dealer near you, visit CooperTire.com. Cooper Tires. Don't give up a thing.
Hey-ya! Doug, are you okay?
Mark, I'm practicing my ninja moves so I can take on weeds with Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer.
Do you mean there are ninjas inside the Spectracide bottle?
Well, using Spectracide is like sending an army of tiny green ninjas to kill weeds and unwanted grass right down to the root. You see the result in as fast as 3 hours.
I see, Sensei. I'm heading over to Lowe's to pick up Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer with ninja fighting power.
Just remember, Mark, weeds can't hide from Spectracide.
Look, Steve, isn't that Jimmy Johnson over there?
Where?
Over there, in the lumber aisle.
Yeah, that's him.
Well, you said if you ever saw him, you'd ask him.
Oh, I'm not going to ask him.
Go on, ask him.
I can't, it's embarrassing.
They say he's a really nice guy. I'm sure he'll do it.
All right, here goes. Excuse me, Jimmy?
Yes?
I feel a little funny about this, but I was wondering if I could ask you a favor.
Sure, what is it?
Would you come over and fix my fence?
Cobalt tools are so comfortable to use. Once you start working with them, you'll never want to quit. Cobalt, the next generation of tough tools. Available only at Lowe's.
Looking for some good news at the gas pump? Chevy has 7 models that offer an EPA estimated 30 miles per gallon highway or better. From HHR with an EPA estimated 30 mpg highway, to the Avail 5 with an EPA estimated 34 mpg highway, and Cobalt XFE with an EPA estimated 36 miles per gallon highway. Chevy's MVPs of mpg. Based on EPA segmentation. See your local Chevy dealer.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Wine Crush. So far this week, we've shot down some myths, we've talked to some experts in the wine business, and we've answered caller questions. But now, it's time to eat.
Laura, we've picked a wine that's easy to find at the local supermarket, and this week we've been tasting Malbec. This is an Argentinian Malbec called Terrazas, so pick that up, and we're going to welcome Chef John Dressler. He's going to come in and tell us what would go especially well with this Malbec. Welcome, John, to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming, Chef.
My pleasure.
Yeah, Malbec is a cool grape, typically used as a blending grape. In the last, I don't know, 5 or 10 years, Malbec has kind of gone out on its own and been bottled. Some things we like to do with Malbec, real simple stuff. Malbec is a real big grape, but we like to do barbecue with Malbec, hamburgers, even Mom's Recipe of meatloaf goes great with the Malbec.
Mm-hmm. What is Mom's Recipe?
You know, my mother, at Dressler's Restaurant, my mother makes a cheesecake for us, and I one time published the recipe for the cheesecake, and my brother's a lawyer, and my mother threatened to sue me. So I think if I gave away her recipe on the meatloaf, I may not be welcome over to her house to enjoy it anymore. I think everyone's got a homespun recipe for meatloaf, and something that works around the house for you is good.
All right, so we'll make sure Mom's secret stays safe. Well, since you can't share the meatloaf recipe, what would you share with us for the everyman cook to have with their Malbec?
Well, you can do a steak au poivre, and we'll be happy to put an au poivre recipe on the website for you. Au poivre recipe, a bit of Worcestershire, cognac.
What does au poivre mean?
With pepper.
Okay.
With pepper, we can handle that.
So it's a pepper steak.
Pepper steak.
Spicy.
You'll take some cracked black pepper. You take your, typically used with a New York strip. You can use it with any steak, but typically with a New York strip, you'll season it with a little bit of salt, crack your pepper, and really mash it right onto your steak. And you can put it in a skillet, saute it on both sides about 4 to 5 minutes for medium rare, and get you an au poivre sauce, pour it right over top, a big glass of Malbec, and party time.
Sounds good.
Sounds great. How would you fix an au poivre sauce?
Well, an au poivre sauce, if you're having a party of four, you can take half a cup of dry white wine, quarter cup of brandy or cognac, tablespoon of Dijon, 2 teaspoons of Worcestershire sauce. Blend that all together. Like I said, you get your pan, put it in a high heat, put a little bit of butter and oil in there, add your steaks, cook them about 4 to 5 minutes on each side. Then what you're going to do is you're going to put your wine mixture in there. That has your white wine, your cognac, your mustard, your Worcestershire. You're going to reduce it by half. Then you get about a half a cup of heavy cream. Whisk in the heavy cream until you get the desired thickness of the sauce. Pour it right over top of steak, and you're good to go.
Sounds great. A reason I love that stuff. Anytime you put heavy cream and wine together, I'm going to be happy.
Exactly.
Well, John, thank you very, very much for coming and joining us on this edition of The Wine Crush. You are always welcome on this show. And for those of you who have not been able to follow along and write as John is talking, you can go to our website, winecrush.com, and find the recipe for every single thing we have talked about this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for coming, John.
For everyone here at Wine Crush and my partner, Michael Ambrose, this is Laura Lawson reminding you that whenever you enjoy wine, make sure you do so responsibly. Join us again next week, and remember, drink the wine you like, not what you read, or as Plato said, in vino veritas. In wine, there is always truth.